Pubcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Alcohol had become my social lubricant, the thing that brought me out of my shell. So I felt a little terrified and uncomfortable to think the thought that I might remove alcohol from the picture. And yet it just seemed like no matter how many of the spiritual practices that I added in, something felt off.
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your hosts, Gina and Linnea, offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hi, everybody. This is Gina Cavalier, and we are talking to Amanda Kuda. We're going to talk today about to alcohol or not to alcohol, a really great subject for the holidays and dry January coming up. So welcome, Amanda.
Hi, Gina. So glad to be here.
This topic is just something that's so important in my life, and I know a lot of other people. So I really wanted to have you on. And why don't you talk a little bit about kind of how you got here and how you're helping your clients navigate this, why it's so important. Your first book is Unbottled Potential, Break Up with Alcohol and Break Through to Your Best Life, which I think is just amazing. And we're going to unpack a bunch of information of why this is important to people of all ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm so excited to hear a little bit more about your story as well, because I imagine we have some crossovers, both being in similar spaces. And I just want to first of all clarify, just because I know that when we talk about alcohol, there can be some like, oh, well, I don't need to hear about that because I don't have a problem. And let me be clear, I did not either. I did the test with my therapist, I did the test online. I was in my 20s and early 30s, a very run-of-the-mill, nothing out of the ordinary, unexceptional social drinker. And in my late 20s, I started into a healing and spiritual journey. I was introduced to this beautiful book, which maybe you've read, The Power of Intention by Dr. Wayne Dyer. And I read it and I slugged through it, first of all. It's not a difficult book, but it definitely is a little dense at first. And I felt so truly that what I was reading in that book was, it just felt good to my soul. And so I really started to go down this spiritual path. And during the weekdays, I was doing all of the spiritual things I could summon up. I was meditating. I was, you know, crystalling. I was journaling. I was yogaing. I was doing, you know, oracle cards, whatever it was that was the hot spiritual topic. I had it. I had it on lock. And then Friday to Saturday to Sunday, I was going out with my friends and drinking. So it was like mindful during the week, mindless on the weekends. And most people would say, oh, well, that's balance. You got it. All good. And for whatever reason, that didn't feel right for me. Something kept feeling off, but I was really hesitant to give up this social drinking lifestyle I had because I had placed a lot of my identity around it. I grew up very shy, very kind of an ugly duckling in adolescence, and I didn't come into my own until after I was in college. And by then, alcohol had become my social lubricant, the thing that brought me out of my shell. So I felt a little terrified and uncomfortable to think the thought that I might remove alcohol from the picture. And yet it just seemed like no matter how many of the spiritual practices that I added in, something felt off. And I finally got to the point where I thought, what if it's not about what more I can add to my life that is optimal and wellness focused, but what I might remove that isn't that. And when I did the math, the one thing that was a resounding kind of uh-oh was alcohol. And it's not that alcohol is bad or wrong. It just was detracting from my ability to step into that spiritual and wellness relationship that I wanted. And we can kind of go from there. It really just, it was something that was an aha moment that maybe I could be a better version of me by removing something versus adding too many things in. And at the end of the day, that inner guidance that said, get alcohol out of the way was absolutely right. My life has never been better and it's never been the same.
Yeah, I'm very similar with you. I didn't have a problem, even though I was raised around it. You know, I married into it. You know, it was something that deeply in my life. My background is Irish. You know, and I just came from Ireland last year, and it is so centered around there. And you want to celebrate with all your friends and family. You just want to giggle. You want to let things go. And you pay a price for it. And also I've had a lot of brain doctors on as well and yes. on the show, and they just say how one glass of alcohol can really change the chemistry in your mind. Also, the another thing that I noticed is the IPAs that are coming out now, they are so strong. They have so much alcohol in them. I had a boyfriend at the time just last year, an ex now, but he was very tall, 6'6", and he loved IPA, and I didn't think anything about beer. Right. Mm-hmm. And he would literally go get two beers, you know, from the IPA and come home. And then I swear he was like slurring his words within an hour. And yes. I was like, it's beer. Like, what is beer? Mm-hmm. And then I started looking at the context on how much alcohol was in there. Mm-hmm. And wow. Like, you got to a point within an hour that you were slurring your words with two bottles of beer. It's mm-hmm. got to be doing havoc on your body. Yeah. So I think that they've also adjusted the alcohol levels into a way that is monumental at this time. And
yeah.
And then we'll unpack that a little bit more. And the second thing is I noticed, I'm in my 50s now, and in my 20s, my first husband was in a lot of people know in Flogging Molly and a punk band mm-hmm. and drank every night, even though I didn't personally have a problem, but I was around it and I wanted to, socialize with his band people. And I was thinking about this today, my mind, and I still drink a little bit here and there, but maybe like once a month, but the way that I can hold things, information now, compared to in my 20s, because I don't drink as much, is completely,
it's radical.
Like life changing. It's radical. Mm-hmm. Radical. I used to think I was really like, I'm just not that smart of a person. I'm not even kidding you.
Yeah.
And moving alcohol has made me retain things. So yeah, let's go into a little bit more on some of those things I just brought up.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. Like, The thing with alcohol is it was created to be overconsumed. By nature, alcohol makes you mindless, right? So it is, even if you're someone who is, and you know, there are absolutely people who just don't really have a taste for it. So they don't ever overdrink. I was a person who, I'm very much an all or nothing person. So I would go in and I would go in hard. Like, I wanted more. And I really took great pride in the fact that I kind of could keep up with all the guys and all of those things. And that's because alcohol is designed for us to overconsume. As you mentioned with the brain specialists and experts who have been on your show, alcohol changes the chemistry of your brain. It makes you loosens your willpower, lessens your willpower. And it also fundamentally changes the way that you're able to deal with stress, adversity, anxiety, any sort of emotional experience. And so all the way around, it's shifting you. If you're wanting to come from a, you know, really mindful, intentional place in your life, and you're putting alcohol in the picture, it is unequivocally, you know, just making the equation of your body, chemistry, of the way that you show up in this world uneven. And the work that you have to do to outdo the I will say damage that a small amount of alcohol will do to your body, your mind, and your soul is pretty extreme. And so I found that, you know, even trying to balance the scales, 4 days of the week that I was not drinking at all, then 5, 6, 7, Friday, Saturday, Sunday that I was drinking moderately to heavily, it didn't even out. And I was probably getting, when I look at it now in retrospect, that I can see, I thought that my hangovers and that all of the ill effects of alcohol were done by like Monday afternoon, Monday evening. Really though, when I had some space away from alcohol and I experienced what it was like to be completely alcohol free, what I experienced was that I actually didn't feel very good until Thursday, that I wasn't clear until Thursday. So I was getting one good day out of my week before it was Friday and we started all over again. Like, no wonder. Yeah, no wonder you thought your own memory was not great when you were in your 20s, because it's so normalized to live this kind of lifestyle where you're working hard and playing hard. And eventually, if you're on a wellness focused path, you get to this place where it just doesn't feel good anymore. But unfortunately, we're fed this message in our world, just kind of like you experienced with your first husband, that this is what we do. This is how we socialize. This is how we get along. This is what you're expected, if not required, to do to survive in our society and be a person who has any sort of a social life. And so it becomes really scary and confronting to consider, what am I going to prioritize right now? Do I want to prioritize my health and my wellness and my spiritual well-being? Or do I want to prioritize this lie that I told myself that I need or deserve alcohol to get on in this world?
And a lot of people suffer with depression and anxiety, and they know, I mean, it's just proven that alcohol contributes to that. And, but a lot of times they use it to cope with depression and anxiety. But what it's actually doing is compounding it into much, you know what I mean? It's not really
making it
helping
worse.
You.
Yeah. It's something that we use as a quick fix, but at the end of the day, it's cheating, and you're not actually getting any of a fix out of it at all.
And I have, just thinking about some of the other people I know or my life, but for example, people that have, you know, very intense illnesses, whether it's, all kinds of different things nowadays, right? Hashimoto's disease, diabetes, you know, we go on, right? And they have a lot of problems, but they drink almost every night, you know?
Yes.
So, and they're going to the doctor and they're taking a lot of medications and but it seems to be a lot of times this huge resistance to let that piece go.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit more about how to support someone in that. It is kind of scary, you know, where it's like a relationship with it. You kind of have to break up with it momentarily.
Yeah, you do. And it's, you know, I'll tell you what, I get it, because I was, even though there was nothing entirely significant about my relationship with alcohol, it was still something, it was a relationship. It was a piece of my identity that I very much, you know, thought was incredibly important. And I can't tell you how many, just like you said, Gina, clients that I work with who are recovering or working through an autoimmune disease, or are working through a diagnosis of some sort, or just wanting, you know, they don't sleep well, or they want to, and I don't, we'll touch lightly on the weight loss factor, because this is not a weight loss quick fix. And I want to be really clear that there's a lot of crossovers between disordered eating and disordered drinking. And so that's a whole other like can of worms. But just on the issues that you discussed, like autoimmune, alcohol. Now, let me be clear. I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I have read a lot of studies from people who are. So the layman's term version of this is alcohol at even a very small portion, let's say a tablespoon, starts to fundamentally shift the way your body is functioning, because your body gets this poison in it, because alcohol is it's a poison. And it says, oh shoot, I have to stop doing all of the normal functional things I do to make the body work, because right now I have to focus all my energy on flushing out this poison. And so if you are trying to heal from something and you're taking a whole bunch of supplements and, you know, trying to eat well and do all of these things, and then you introduce alcohol into the system every single day, your body is not processing those nutrients. It's also not, you know, doing at the cellular level what it needs to do to recover from your disease, because it's now shifted its focus to processing this alcohol. And of course, your body is still operating in the background. It's just not operating optimally. And if you are working through healing from something, ooh, you really need to need to have your body fighting for you as hard as it can. And alcohol is detracting from that. But a lot of doctors are hesitant to say so. And I have a couple of theories as to why. One is that it's not sexy. It's not sexy to say, hey, you should stop drinking. And then you have to deal with all of the backlash and all of the stigma around it. And frankly, I work with a lot of people in the healing and helper fields. And that is a place where alcohol is, you know, desperately misused, because we have people who are dealing with all these problems every day, and they just want to shut off at the end of the day. So I also wonder if there's this, you know, question with doctors of, who am I to tell you to quit drinking when I use this tool as well? And so there's a lot of reasons why someone who is on a healing path to work through, you know, like you said, a Hashimoto's or whatever, might not have been even given the soundbite to take a break from alcohol. But let this be your soundbite, that alcohol is not helping your body heal. In fact, it is incredibly distracting to your body when your body's trying to heal from something.
Yeah. And my listeners know that I wrote a book about surviving suicidal ideation with a trauma mm-hmm. therapist, Dr. Julia Kelly. And mm-hmm. in our research, and I'm doing a documentary now on this subject matter. And, you know, doctors are one of the number one profession of suicides in America. So
stressful.
There's definitely a big circle that I'm kind of seeing here. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about, I want to get into, like you said, into the weight loss factor of it too, but how do you tell your clients, and I know you guide people along who want to do this, you coach them, mm-hmm. which is great. Another quick thing I was thinking about is the marketing behind it. You know, mm-hmm. for 100 years,
yeah.
I mean, we put labels on marijuana to death and all kinds of different things, right? Which is a whole other topic about how potent a marijuana is now and what it's doing to our brains these days. But uh-huh. Marketing on alcohol is incredible. I mean, they spend mm-hmm. so much money and to mm-hmm. make it positive in the whole environment, yeah. right?
So yep.
You're programmed to think of that, you know, well, I'm a loser, or something's wrong with me if I can't go out and have a drink with my friends and mm-hmm. things like that.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think that, you know, everything that we receive is marketed to us as inconsequential, basically. Like, oh, it's okay. You can do any of these things. That it everything that's marketed to us is marketed as no big deal. But, you know, in my book, I called it the Carrie Bradshaw effect, because that's what it felt like for me. It wasn't that I necessarily was falling victim to the marketing messages and the commercials, but I saw, you know, I grew up in the era of Sex and the City, and there was this glamorized woman who I also grew up in a very small town. So anyone living a big city life, I'm like, oh, I want to be her. And right, Carrie Bradshaw was chic. She was sexy. She was funny. She had a rad closet. She had great girlfriends. She was out and about having hot men flirt with her. And I'm like, yeah, I want that. And what did Carrie Bradshaw have in her hand? A Cosmo Martini. And so, I mean, let's be clear, I wasn't classy enough for that to get started, but I coded in order to be classy, fun, flirtatious, social, all of these things, it's normal to drink. And so it's just, it's minimized in our mind, the possible consequences of it, because we romanticize it so much. And so we're able to look past all of the many, many bad days we have with alcohol, because for a moment, it gives us this romantic level of bliss or perceived level of sexiness or sophistication. And yeah, it's definitely marketed to us to where we, you know, would think it's absolutely just normal. And it's hard to get over that. So I think that one of the things, you know, to touch on what you were saying that I work on with my clients is really understanding where you've fallen into, you know, for me, that Carrie Bradshaw story and where you've romanticized alcohol, because it's just like any other unfulfilling relationship you get into. You have to really look at it with open eyes and say, is this giving to me more than it is taking from me, or vice versa? And in an unproductive relationship, the other entity is always taking more than it's giving, always taking more than it's adding. And that was what was happening for me with alcohol. But I was in that unhealthy state where I was like, well, but when it's good, it's so good. You know, you've heard people talk about relationships like that, and you're like, sister, break up with him. And that's what I really needed to see with alcohol, was the moments of, okay, does the good outweigh the bad, or does the bad outweigh the good. And so I had to be really clear with that. And I really have to help my clients through that because usually we don't do that inventory. Now, the next piece is really similar to what we talked about with doctors is to resource people to manage stress and manage their emotions. And when we live in a society where we've been taught that a quick fix cure is A-okay and that we don't have the tools to manage big emotions and stress, like I can't imagine a medical professional, especially over the past 3 years, what they've had to deal with. In fact, I can because I've had many clients who are in that profession and it is really, really heart-wrenching the work that they have been, you know, subjected to and they've chosen to do as a service to us. And we need to have better coping skills. We need to have ways to downregulate, to be empathetic without being, you know, taking on other people's emotions and taking on the weight of that. And the reality is we haven't been taught those skills. And so alcohol seems like a logical thing to bring into our life because it helps you check out quickly. But you know, the next day after you drank, those feelings of anxiety, sadness, stress, they just boomerang back. And that's not what we want. So my other goal is to not just help you remove alcohol, but if you are on this path where you feel like this could be beneficial, how can we give you skills that actually help you navigate life and feel really confident alcohol-free so that then you don't want to turn to the other thing because you feel powerful in your own body and mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how do you communicate that to the people around you? You know, of course, right. The first thing I think of is, oh, do you have a problem? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, mm-hmm. actually, just, you know, another thing that when you get into a rhythm of saying drinking every weekend, yeah. a lot of people that I've encountered, they have life goals that, say they're in a 9-to-5 job and something mm-hmm. that they just happened to fall into and it wasn't really mm-hmm. their long-term passion. Their long-term passion is over here mm-hmm. and it's put on the side every weekend. And the weekend is maybe their only time to actually do the work, but then they mm-hmm. get caught up in being social. And like you said, it takes really days for it to come out of your body. And then that project sits on that shelf. And then there's this anxiety and this life purpose that sometimes feels like misaligned. And that goes down the rabbit hole of, again, of when you're not really feeling self-love or you're following your passion that, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like I've seen people that, you know, have let that part of their life, given it more focus, mm-hmm. but in the background, you know, if you just like, that's why I like the idea you have for Dry January. Give it that mm-hmm. 30 days, really take a look at it, right? So,
yeah.
So let's talk about Dry. Ooh, what is that?
Yeah, I really just felt what you said so deeply, Gina, because there are so many people who are really ambitious, who are kicking ass at whatever they're doing in life, but in their heart, they want to do something else. Like they picked a career or a path or a relationship or a whatever that checked out on paper and that they were good at, but in their soul, they want to be doing something else. And so instead of making the time to do that thing that their soul is calling them to do, they quiet down their calling with alcohol because they don't think they're permitted to do it or that it might be too hard or that it might ruffle too many feathers. And if you keep doing that, like, of course you're going to go into like existential crisis, depression, anxiety, whatever. And so what if instead you just peeled away the thing that was taking your time and energy for 30 days, just take a break, just see, you know, I think that real change requires a little bit more than that. But for me, I started my journey with Dry January because I was right in that place you described. I was checking all of the boxes. I was doing all the things. I was getting the accolades. I had the good job, the good car, the good social circle. And I felt empty. I felt lonely. I felt unfulfilled. And I knew I was meant for something else, but I couldn't get the self-confidence, the courage, or the time to do any of those things, to pursue my desires. And so when I removed alcohol and started to really work on those self-confidence building skills, started to invest my time in different activities, I started to just really develop a foundation for what my life could look like. And for me, I did Dry January and then I extended that challenge another 30 days, another 60 days until I actually didn't drink again, which I know that's not for everyone. But for me, because it allowed me the space to kind of just be clear-headed, to see life from a different perspective, and then to pursue the things that I'd been wanting on my heart for so long, it felt so powerful. I didn't want to go back to that relationship with alcohol. And furthermore, I wanted more people to feel like me because it felt so good. And so that's like been the basis of my work, is to help people who are kind of on that path where you have a wellness mindset. You know, you're doing a lot of the things, you're ambitious, you're successful, but you want something else. Like, I want you to have that thing. And I know that you can have it more quickly and with more ease if alcohol were out of the picture. And a great way to start is to do something really easy, like a 30-day break for dry January.
Yeah. And it also helps you raise your frequency, mm-hmm. energetically, not just physically. I mean, probably the first thing you feel is physically better, but it raises your vibration a little bit higher. So you can kind of, I don't know, you almost are walking around kind of a little bit more aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. Just knowing times like I have been drinking, or hangovers to me are the worst thing in the world. I mean, mm-hmm. if they weren't around, I mean, we'd probably all be walking around really drunk a lot, you know, at a time.
Yeah.
Is that there's some kind of barometer of like, you were bad.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
I remember thinking, I never want another hangover again. I know everybody understands what that feels like who drinks. And I do have some family members that can drink and never get a hangover at all, no matter how much they drink. And I think that's a chemical thing that they have that, I haven't seen it in a lot of people.
I sure don't have it. I'll tell you that.
And it's horrible. I mean, hangover is just the worst in the world.
Oh yeah. Mine started to get, you know, in terms of energetics, they started to get really debilitating. And maybe it was, you know, getting closer to 30 or whatever, because I stopped drinking pretty young in perspective of when people usually come to this shift. But I would drink very little. And once I started to really raise my energetic vibration and really step into some of those spiritual practices that I wanted to embody, my body would tolerate barely no alcohol, like barely any at all, before it really just set me to feeling really gross and anxious and icky. That's the best way I can describe it. And I think that a lot of people who are energetically sensitive and who are working to raise their energetic vibration with intention will start to experience that too, that they're trying to drink less and less, but no matter what, alcohol is still like really having these really nasty, gnarly effects on their system.
And it totally deprives your sleep, no matter what, who you are, you know, just mm-hmm. having, like you said, one drink will, that's the issue my mother has, is she'll go like weeks and weeks without drinking, but then she'll like that, you know, if she has one, she wants to have more. And that's just her personality. Yeah. She knows it, she works on it, but she cannot sleep that night, no matter what, she has no good sleep. And so she knows she's signing up for a bad night of sleep. And that's going to put her off a couple of days, you know, but she's in her 70s now. But other than the sleep, you were also mentioned the weight thing. I don't think, like you were saying, like it's a way to like quote unquote lose weight, but there's got to be like anti-inflammatory things that happen once you, right? And kind of what information do you know about that with weight?
Yeah, loss? Absolutely. And thank you for clarifying, because you will, as long as you know, do other things, very, very likely lose weight, and probably maybe a significant amount. If you're a dude, you're definitely going to lose it faster and more easily than us ladies. But, and that's a frustration pact for all of my clients, but I just want to be really clear that I don't want what I teach to seem like a quick fix weight loss thing, because that's not how I roll, but it will probably be a reciprocal effect, because alcohol is, again, changing the function of your body, changing the way that you process. Alcohol is not metabolized easily with through the body. And so, and then you're having inflammation. You're probably having just general bloating because your body is dehydrated while you're drinking, and I can give you some resources on people who explain this better, but when you have alcohol in your body, it feels to your body like there's a lot of fluid, but because your body doesn't recognize alcohol and it recognizes water, if you drink a whole bunch of water, let's say you drink a shot of vodka and then a liter of water, these are not accurate ratios, but your body's going to say, oh, something's wrong here, but we know what this water one is. So it's actually just going to flush it out, which is why you pee so much when you drink. So your body is not going to retain the water that you're trying to drink to cancel out the alcohol or, you know, whatever we've been taught. And there's just so many backwards things that we've been taught to do to help ourselves with a hangover or help ourselves, you know, process alcohol that just are not accurate. And alcohol just sits in your body. And yeah, it's for lack of a better word, dead weight. And so if you're someone who's on a weight loss journey, or you like to, or you work out and you eat really healthy, but then you drink, it's just, again, it's an uneven equation that is not doing you any favors. And I would say take alcohol out of the picture for a while and see what happens.
And I just, you know, want to commend you at your obviously younger age, coming to this conclusion and, taking this little challenge on and offering your wisdom to other people. I know that the one thing that people think about is like, how do I tell my friends and family what's going on? Like, how do I introduce this to my circle without, I mean, what is your recommendations on that? Or, and going out and having, do you just cancel everything? Which I know you're going to say no, but like, what, like, what, you know what I mean? That's the thing everybody's thinking of, like, well, I got a birthday party and I got a,
I think it depends upon what kind of person you are. So I am a person who is very stubborn, Gina. So when I decided I wasn't drinking anymore, I was like heels dug in the heels. And I'm like, I'm just going to do everything else and show everybody that I can do everything without alcohol. Now, quickly, I realized that a lot of those things that I did without alcohol actually weren't fun. So the birthday parties and the whatever that I like was so intent on going to, I'm like, actually, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me anymore. But then there's another type of person who has, you know, responds to peer pressure a little bit differently, who I would say that for a while, maybe it would be a good idea to take a step back from the social scene if you're not someone who's going to respond to peer pressure and temptation very easily. But because that wasn't an issue for me, I was like, nope, let me show you what I'm made of. I went ahead and went out and did all of the things that I used to do. Now, I also think that because I'm so headstrong, I approached it with this level of just like moxie and confidence that I don't know where it came from, but I never really had anyone question me, but I was really afraid. And I still get a little like ick when someone asks, oh, well, did you have a problem? How did you know you had a problem? And the reality is I only thought I may have had a problem because that is the narrative that we're taught about alcohol, that the only reason you quit drinking is because you have a problem. Now that narrative is shifting slowly but surely, but I felt it, you know, maybe I even over-talked a little bit when I was first getting started, because I would go into this diatribe of, oh no, I don't have a problem. I just didn't like the way it made me feel. And I would chatter about it, but you don't have to do what I did. So I would say that if you are someone who's new to this journey, that I like to give like a 3-part script of, I just have it in the back of my mind for when people ask if I'm not drinking. And that looks like a definitive, I'm not drinking right now, or I'm not drinking, period. And then a time frame, if that feels good to you. So like right now is a good enough time frame, or I'm not drinking through the end of the month, through the end of the year, through the end of the season, whatever it is. I'm not drinking for 60 days, 90 days, 100 days. And then give an inarguable truth as to why, because I don't like the way it makes me feel. And I want to see if I feel better without it. No one can argue about how you feel. Okay. Now they can argue with, I'm driving tomorrow, or I have to get up early. Those are very arguable, very like peer pressure-y things that a squirrely friend could get around. So I always say, I'm not drinking, make it definite and say it with confidence, not like Eeyore, like I'm not drinking right now, like being sad about it. I'm not drinking for the next 90 days. And I didn't like the way it made me feel. And I want to feel better. I want to see if I feel better without it. And that's it. And I have never had anyone really give me any level of flack with that simple statement. So please steal that from me if that feels good to you.
And you don't have to worry about DUIs, and you don't have to worry about
I'll still say the wrong thing sometimes, but you don't have to worry about embarrassing yourself or doing something that you forget or hooking up with someone who you don't really want to hook up with or you wouldn't normally hang around. There's so many benefits to it.
And is there any suggestion with mocktails, or is that something, you know, you did or that you recommend? And
there nobody are, knows. Yeah, no one knows that you're not, you know, that you're not drinking if you choose not to tell them. Because mocktails weren't as prevalent when I stopped drinking 7 years ago, I just found it was best case scenario just to be bold and tell people that I wasn't drinking. But almost any, even in small towns that I've been to, a lot of places now are carrying these really great non-alcoholic options that taste exactly like their alcoholic counterpart. You know, you can get non-alcoholic beer, de-alcoholized wine, which is actually wine that was completely crafted and then the alcohol was pulled out of it. Non-alcoholic spirits, you can get things that taste delightful and exciting that actually are good for you and don't have all of these negative effects. And a lot of the kind of pre-crafted mocktails or ready-to-drink beverages have adaptogens and other really amazing things in them that can actually boost your mood in a way that alcohol never could. So there's so many great options out there right now. I'm happy to recommend to anyone who is looking for an alternative.
And I just want to do a shout out to AA. I know that that's helped so many people mm-hmm. who really needed a place to go to. I live really close to the ocean, and every Sunday for 53 years, there's a group that meets right on mm-hmm. the sand. Now, when you go out there on Sunday, literally there's about 300 people every Sunday just sitting in a giant circle. And building community around that and showing support anonymously is just so wonderful. It's really, I've seen it like save people's lives, having that consistent go to for the people that need that, but it should really be recommended. I mean, it should be really, championed for the work that they've done over the mm-hmm. years and Al-Anon and all those kind of things. Because once you start to unpack anything that you're changing, whether it's alcohol or, a codependent relationship or whatever you're mm-hmm. looking at, that's why the things I do love about what's happening in these times is we can all have our own channel, our own platform, our own voice. And we mm-hmm. are actually outgoingly impacting things in our life together. We're not mm-hmm. We're dispelling the taboos of having to hide in the corner and saying, I have a problem. I have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. whatever it is. And I think that's a big part of what you're doing. And I mm-hmm. definitely want to thank you for that. And,
thank you.
We're going to link everything into below where people can find you, find your book, your Instagram, and ask you questions. So everything will be loaded before below for everybody. Is there anything else you kind of think that we should hit on that we missed, or that you would like to end on a little bit inspirational message to everybody who's going through or thinking
about
this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if anything that we've talked about today has hit a hot button for you, that it is, the first step is just to get curious, to just investigate and ask, would my life potentially be better, stronger, happier, easier without alcohol? And that's not to put, I don't buy into a shame-focused approach or a guilt-based approach or any of these things that make you feel not good, but would it be possible that you could be a more powerful version of you if alcohol was not in the picture, even if you only consume it every now and again, or at a very small amount, or at a very normalized amount, as was for me. And that's, I think, just starting there and asking the question and getting curious and knowing I'm not here to create a culture of sober people. I'm just here to be kind of a way shower for people who this resonates with. And you're like me and you feel a little scared, that you feel like you might become a social outcast, or you wonder if you really need to do something as drastic as cut out a substance from your life. And I think that I take a very gentle approach to it that is accessible to people who don't resonate with some of the other approaches that are, as you said, tremendously helpful and wonderful. But there's different approaches that are necessary for every person and every place that you are on your journey. So if anything that I shared today resonated, I would love to connect with you.
Thank you, Amanda Kuda. We appreciate you. We applaud you for the work that you're doing. And I totally, absolutely agree. This is a wonderful thing that you're doing. And thank you so much. You're welcome. Gina Cavalier here, Liberated Healer. Please like, share, and subscribe. Thank you to all the people that are sending encouragement, sending questions or notes, or reaching out to me on the show. We really appreciate you. And just sending you so much love. And think about the 30 days. I think it's a great idea. I think it's really, get curious about how to improve your life is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Thank you so much, you guys. Bye.
Podcast.